Good afternoon. This is Ken McDermott Rowe. The name of the program is In Context. You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Candivero.
Hey, everybody.
And behind the board doing double duty is our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe.
Good afternoon.
As you heard in the PA announcements coming before, just before the show, we've instituted a new public affairs block. WPKN is a community radio station, and in order to better serve the community, WPKN has created a new block of interactive community-based programs with emphasis on call-ins. And our show, In Context, is part of that new block from noon to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday. And our show, Gus and I and Marshawn explore important current issues affecting your community, the nation, such as the economy, unemployment, and the war. And also on the first Monday, we have WPKN Listener listener Report, where you can call and give your input about the station. On Tuesday, we have Indigenous Radio with Yuccasin Ghost Horse on Native American issues. Wednesday, we have Health Issues, a call-in called The Emotion Roadmap with Chuck Wolf. And on a Thursday, another call-in, The Organic Farm Stand with Guy Beardsley and his friends. And the last Thursday, The Vet Show with Julia Clark, where she'll answer calls on issues relating to your pets. And then on Friday, we'll take calls on our show, Review of the Arts in Our Communities, with Richard Feniger. So those are efforts that we're making here at WPKN to strengthen our ties with this wonderful community, and we thank you for your support. And we also want your feedback. If you have any comments about our show In Context, give Gus and I drop Gus and I an email at ken@mdrtalk.org. If you want to talk about the station generally or other programs, write to Peter Beauchamp, our general manager, at gm@wpkn.org. So, Gus, we have a very interesting show planned today. Could you tell the audience about it?
Yeah, sure. Our guest is Mark Dice, and he is an author, a filmmaker for YouTube short documentaries, where he has some great satire work. His bio is, Mark is a media analyst, social critic, political activist, and author from San Diego, California. Mark's work involves producing videos and literature about encouraging people to question our celebrity-obsessed culture and the role the mainstream media plays in our shaping our lives. Mark has been featured in documentaries and TV shows such as the History Channel's Decoded. He's written several books, including the book we're going to be talking about today, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True, The Illuminati Facts and Fiction, and The New World Order Facts and Fiction. You can learn more about him at his website, markdice.com, his Facebook page, facebook.com/markdice, and his YouTube channel, youtube.com/markdice. Mark, are you with us?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Why don't we start with just a basic rundown of what is Big Brother? Your book, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True, I read it cover to cover. I found it incredibly fascinating. You did some really great research in there, detailing where we are, where we've come from, and where we're going to in terms of snooping technology and the future of our society, and paralleling it to the book 1984. So why don't you just start with a basic explanation of what Big Brother is?
Yeah, Big Brother is a term that George Orwell coined in his book. Really, it's one of the most popular novels in history, 1984, and it's the term given to the surveillance state government technocratic system of the overbearing government system that's using technology to mm-hmm. invade people's lives in their personal lives and to monitor the society everywhere they go, everything they do, everything they say, to control the information that society gets. In order to keep society in check and subservient to this all-powerful government system, which is called the party or the inner party mm-hmm. in the book. And Big Brother is a term, it's supposedly in the book a real person to sort of give a face to the government so you can have, it sort of tries to personalize this huge structure And so Big Brother is always watching you, and that's the term that we hear, and that's where we get this term from, is from Orwell's book. That's where we get the term Orwellian. People, when they talk of an Orwellian technology or an Orwellian government program, they're referring to a creepy, invasive government program or technology that is parallel with Orwell's book or the system that is in Orwell's novel.
Mark, this is Ken here. In your book, you quote from the novel, you say, quote, "You had to live in the assumption that every sound you made was overheard, and except in darkness, every movement scrutinized." Is that where we're headed?
We are headed there, and in some instances, we're already there. I have sitting on my desk next to me my iPhone, and even though it's turned off, the government, the NSA agencies, and even sophisticated hackers can activate the microphone in my cell phone, even though it's powered off, and can use that microphone to listen to the area surrounding the phone as a directional bug. I also, the laptop that's sitting on my desk has a piece of tape covering the built-in camera that's in the laptop, because friends of mine, coworkers of mine years ago laughed at me and thought I was paranoid. And then a few years ago, it came out that a school in Pennsylvania had given laptops to the students and installed some software on there and were actually spying on the students, watching them and taking photos of them wirelessly, because all the computers now are connected to the internet via Wi-Fi. And so that is not only something that we're heading into, that's something that can happen now with sophisticated hackers, with government agencies, people in the so-called alphabet agencies, the FBI, NSA. There's also numerous iPhone apps that use actively the microphone in your cell phone, in your smartphone, to listen to the surrounding areas. It can tell whether you're inside, whether you're outside. There are some stores that are now putting sounds in their store itself, and then the app can identify those sounds, can tell you're in the store, can tell you're near those displays. So it's a very double-edged sword, and that's why I love technology. I've been a big technology nerd my whole life, but as I was watching this technology progress, it started to seem like it was very easily abused in ways that were right out of Orwell's book, which is why I wrote Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True.
And all these things that you're talking about are in your book, detailed with references of where you got the information in case people don't quite believe that it's as bad as you say it is. And in fact, it's probably 10 times worse than you say it is. You're probably padding the truth. But
I have a reputation as being a conspiracy guy because I write about the Illuminati and the New World Order, and I'm really proud of this book because there's no conspiracy theories in this book. I mean, I quote and source every statement with mainstream sources from Computer World and from different technology journals, and even we can get into it later. There's some patents that have been applied for and awarded for some.
We definitely want to hear about that. We definitely want to hear about those patents in a little bit. Keeping with this technology right now, though, to back you up, the fact that a couple of years ago, my mother sent me a YouTube video saying, "Oh my God, they can use your cell phone as a microphone even when it's off." And I'm like, "Ma, come on!" And I went and I watched the video and I was like, "Oh wow, this all makes sense," because even when these smartphones are supposedly turned off, they still have some power going through as long as the battery is plugged in, and so they can be turned on remotely, just like people out there who have Blackberries. Do you wonder why they turn on in less than a second once you hit the power button? It's because it's already on. It's just in a dormant state. So it can.
Yeah, I say turned off, I don't mean when I'm not talking on the phone. I mean, obviously someone can intercept that call quite easily, but I'm saying not only when there's no call being made, but when you power that phone down.
Exactly.
Yeah, remotely. They can activate that, and obviously it has some advantages. Obviously, for you have a drug dealer or some organized criminal is going to be, you know, have his bug on him. You can bug their desk, but people need to be aware of this. And there are numerous instances of hackers mm-hmm. that target people and do this. You can. It's quite fairly easy to accomplish this on your own. You don't have to be working with the FBI. You don't have to have access to some of that high-tech technology that these alphabet agencies have. Teenagers and rogue hackers can do this and have done this.
Now, that's a good point because you mentioned that it can be used for law enforcement, but at what point are we sacrificing too much liberty for a sense of security?
Well, that's what one of the famous quotes from Thomas Jefferson is. You shouldn't give up your security in the name of, or you shouldn't give up your liberties in the name of securities. And there's another parallel.
And those who do deserve neither.
Parallels
right?
In 1984, the novel, and our world today. That it's so scary because the driving force for a lot of this technology. Today, the invasive technology is this war on terror. It's this perpetual state of war, and it's very scary and sad that in the novel, the war just continued to go on, and the enemies would shift. First, they were fighting one country, then they were fighting another country, and the previous country was their friend, and the population was so distracted with entertainment that they didn't even understand that the enemy were shifting. All they knew is that there was this war going on, and that was the justification for eliminating their rights, for having the Big Brother technology, for having long working hours and poor conditions, for having low rations. And so there's so many parallels, and the driving engine in 1984, the novel, was this perpetual state of war. And we also see that today with the Patriot Act, with it's calmed down now. It's been over 10 years of this war on terror, but all through the Bush administration, it was constantly fear-mongering. Al-Qaeda's everywhere. Give up your rights in order to be safe. What's interesting in the book, in the novel, after a while, one of the characters, the main character, Winston Smith's girlfriend, Julia, she amuses out loud that the government may be bombing itself in order to create this perpetual state of fear. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to see the overblown fear-mongering of the war on terror, a lot of the inconsistencies with what happened on 9/11 and leading up to the war in Iraq. There's a document declassified in the National Archives, Operation Northwoods, that our government actually put plans on paper to bomb Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
And then blame a political enemy and use that as a justification for war. Mm-hmm. So these parallels just go on and on and on.
If you just joined us, you're listening to In Context on WPKN, and we're speaking with Mark Dice about the growth in high-tech government surveillance. He's the author of Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True. And we'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes. And also, you can send us an email if you have an email question or comment to Ken at mdrtalk.org. That's Ken at mdrtalk.org. Mark, in your book, you write quite a bit about the proliferation of security cameras. Could you talk about the proliferation of cameras, say, in the United Kingdom or in New York City with Operation Sentinel?
Yeah, now everyone's familiar with security cameras. They obviously are in all retail stores, banks, and things. But now the cameras are becoming, they're implementing artificially intelligent software with them. They're implementing microphones that listen to people, facial recognition software, so these cameras aren't just able to go back and watch what happened, but these cameras now can identify people. Specifically, you can flag individuals. There's a build-up and a push for the Olympics in London, the 2012 Olympics next year. There's a company that is lobbying to install their surveillance systems on the streets that not only watch people, but have microphones that listen and can pick up conversations from 100 yards away. And using their software, it analyzes the conversations, and they determine allegedly whether a conversation is hostile or not.
Wow.
And so it picks up if the pitch of someone's conversation is too high, if the tone is determined to be an angry tone, or if the volume, and it has this calculation. And so it listens to everyone on the street, and now we have these computers that determine whether someone may be hostile or may be angry, and then it dispatches the police. And in the novel, in the 1984, people had the Big Brother was listening in their house on the public streets, and they couldn't even whisper a negative comment about Big Brother or the government or their job, because they feared, and rightfully so, that the government was going to be listening to this,
mm-hmm.
and would they would be punished for that.
You write that there are, as of the time you wrote your book, there were 4.2 million cameras in the United Kingdom alone. How about the U.S.?
I don't know the number in the U.S., but Chicago has been implementing them. New York City is going to be the new Orwellian capital of the United States. They have license plate reading cameras that flag people coming in with certain license plates. If someone is circling a block several times, uh-huh. their license plate is flagged, and their uh-huh. car is flagged as a suspicious vehicle. There's a push from the Visionix, one of the leading facial recognition companies, to put facial recognition software now on the streets, in airports, in schools, in businesses. We have currently, the technology is so advanced that in Home Depot and in Target, the computer system determines whether someone has been loitering in an aisle too long.
Yeah.
if they haven't approached the shelf and picked up something, this computer system will determine that, and then it will call either security, or it'll call for a sales associate, a minimum wage slave, to come over and talk to this person. And the next step is going to be the facial recognition systems linking who's coming in, how long they're staying, which products they're looking at, and then cross-referencing that with what they actually buy, so they can already determine how many people come into the store, how long are they staying in the store, are they buying anything, what are they buying. They're selling this advertisement, this information to advertisers. The data mining companies, Choice Point, have all sorts of information on people. What kind of prescription drugs are you on? What medication are you taking? And as we move into this socialist New World Order with Obamacare possibly being implemented, if they can't stop that, you're gonna be targeted now. Everything you buy, oh wait, you're eating too much chocolate cake there. You're a strain on the system. You know, your healthcare premiums are going to have to go up now because your sugar intake is a little too high. That's what we're moving towards.
So now we're going to be hassled if we're standing in the Home Depot aisle and we just can't decide if we need the pressure treated wood or not. So someone's going to come over and give us a hard time because we might be a terrorist.
Yeah, you're extremely suspicious. People who are loitering on the streets in New York.
A couple of weeks ago here near New York City, there was a terror alert because someone dropped a lunch bag. A camera picked up that there was a bag left idle on the sidewalk near a bench, and the police were dispatched to go and investigate. And so they had to go and X-ray the bag to make sure that it was just a ham sandwich and not a bomb. And it's just ridiculous. The society that we live on is such a knee-jerk society where we just jump over backwards just because we're so afraid that there's some kind of boogeyman behind every single corner in every unmarked brown bag. I mean, on airplanes, we've read about in your book, I think you mentioned, on the back of the seats, they're talking about putting cameras that can read our facial expressions and figure out if we're upset and what we're talking about. I mean, every time you want to travel, we have to give up our rights and get groped and, you know, shaken down by these TSA thugs, secret police, who are now asking people about whether – I read this morning on InfoWars, there was an article that someone had some silver coins that he was going to bring on vacation with him and cash in when he got there and use that as his spending money. And they want to know, what are the coins for? Where are you bringing them? Where did you get them? How much are they worth?
Could you, Mark, talk about that EU idea of putting cameras on the back of airplane seats?
Yeah, the technology has been developed. This company has approached the European Union Airport Administration. What they want to do is put cameras and microphones in the back of every seat on the airplanes that watch you and listen to you, and using more artificial intelligence software, whatever sort of algorithms they've programmed into the system, they want this computer to determine whether or not a passenger is potentially going to be dangerous or hostile, or if you start using certain keywords in your conversation, then it's going to flag you as being dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so absurd because this war on terror has been over a decade now, and almost every instance of every supposed terrorist attack plot that's been stopped in America, on American soil, really wasn't an organic terrorist plot. It was provocateured by the FBI,
mm-hmm.
where they had an undercover agent find a group of morons or a lone wolf Muslim that they knew was unstable,
uh-huh.
and they encouraged that person or this group to get on board with a terrorist plot, an alleged terrorist plot that this undercover FBI agent had formulated. And then as soon as this individual or this group agrees with him and says, that sounds like a good idea, and then gets on board, asks some questions, they'll deliver some fake explosives to this person, then they'll arrest them and say, we've thwarted another Muslim terrorist attack trying to build a bomb. Well, he got this supposed explosive from the FBI. And in almost every instance,
I can't name
FBI
one where
creates these people, gives them the bomb-making equipment, and then arrests them so that they can put this story out that, see, we've stopped another Muslim terrorist plot.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting now is, since it's been 10 years of this, and a lot of people are becoming awakened and saying, wait a minute, this is just overblown. I mean, regardless of whether you think the 9/11 attacks were a false flag stand down, or how extensive the lies were that brought us to the war in Iraq, it's you got to admit that everybody now has started to realize that, wait a minute, this whole war on terror, this thing is very overblown. Where are these sleeper cells of Al-Qaeda? What are they waiting for? Are they waiting 20 years? Are they sleeping for 20 years before they're activated to attack? So what they're doing now is they're shifting the blame to right-wing, conservative, white males, and trying to focus that fear onto them as the new terrorists.
The terror threats at home.
Yeah, the homeland threats, because they don't like Obama, they're racist. There's a new television show on Showtime called Homeland, which is about a white Marine that comes back from war in Iraq.
Very interesting.
And now joins Al-Qaeda, and he is a secret Al-Qaeda supporter.
So be very afraid. Hey, you're listening to In Context, and we're speaking with Mark Dice about the growth in government high-tech surveillance. And if you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. Or if you'd rather email us your question, you can do so to ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe, and I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hold on one second. If you thought that the cameras in the back of the plane proposal and the microphones were absurd, there's a patent application that was filed by a company called Lampard Less Than Lethal, and they put together a video showing their device. And I thought this was a satire from The Onion or a joke, just showing how absurd this fear-mongering war on terror push is for the Orwellian technology. But this is a legitimate device that is they've subscribed for a patent, applied for a patent, and it's an electronic shock bracelet that this company proposed that airline passengers have to wear.
Yeah.
And then if a passenger is determined to be unruly or dangerous or a threat, then the flight crew would literally electrocute that person in that seat using the shock bracelet. You have to see this video. Go on YouTube and check it out. The application for the patent reads, quote, a method of providing air travel security for passengers via aircraft comprises a situating a remotely activatable electronic device on each passenger in the position to deliver a disabling shock when activated. An arming shock device for the subsequent selective activation by the selective operating remote control disposed within the aircraft. So it just goes on. And then these people pitched this to the Department of Homeland Security. And then one Homeland Security official, Paul Rawald, actually sent a letter back to them saying that it is clear we are interested in the immobilizing security bracelet and look forward to receiving a written proposal. So the Department of Homeland Security expressed interest in this device, which is something straight out of a Hollywood movie. There's a movie with Nicolas Cage where I think they chained everybody up and had shock bracelets on them. It's a movie about a flight with prisoners.
Is it Con Air? Con Air.
This company not only thought of this idea, but designed it and applied for a patent for this Orwellian device.
Now, Mark, I want to just quickly, because I want to move on to some other topics, but is there any evidence that all this surveillance technology actually helps to stop crime?
Not that I have seen. It's mainly an intimidation tactic in order to get people to willfully give up their freedoms and to be afraid to sort of stand up for their rights. It's an intimidation tactic, in a sense, more or less. It's quackery as well. I can't see how these devices would even possibly be able to identify someone. Let's say someone's having a bad day. They're on an airplane on the way to a funeral. Okay, obviously they're not going to be looking very happy. Mm-hmm. Let's say they're having a discussion with their neighbor passenger about an article in the newspaper, and they pop off a couple key words. They use the word terrorism, flight, hijack, bomb in a conversation that's not even threatening. If a human were to overhear it, wouldn't even think it was suspicious. Obviously, they're talking about a news story. But I think it's largely an intimidation tactic in order to keep the population submissive to this new world order, to this tyrannical government growing bureaucracy that we have.
Right. Did you quote the late Senator Sam Ervin as saying, quote, when people fear surveillance, whether it exists or not, we shall cease to live in a free society.
Well, like for example, here in Greenwich, we have red light cameras, except that it's not a law yet where they can actually be used. I figured this out. When they put all the cameras up, I was like, wait a minute, I didn't hear about this. And I wrote our local representative, and he said, oh, well, no, there's bills in proposal, but they're not actually allowed to actually issue tickets yet. And I'm thinking, so what's the point of the cameras? I mean, they're on every red light. Every cop car has those license plate reader cameras on them. But yet, if you actually have something that you need the cops to respond to help you, you know, they don't show up because, like, for example, March, you lived in Ohio, right? And tell that story quickly.
Well, when I was living in Ohio for about 2 years, and it's interesting that you should mention those cameras because they had them on many, many of the intersections, and you could guarantee they would send you the ticket in the mail. But what was interesting is I was walking down the street from where my house was, and I heard gunfire. And I've shot, been a marksman as a child. I know the sound of gunfire. It was distinctive sound of a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, and it was less than 100 meters away from me. So first thing I did is I turned around, walked back to my house with a very brisk pace, and I called the police. And the police, in any civilized society would show up, make sure I was safe. No, they said, don't worry. Okay, we'll send somebody by to check it out. No cop ever showed up at my house. No cop even ever showed up at my block. But gosh darn it, if that camera took a photograph of your license plate, you got a ticket in the mail like that.
And so the cops are really just about revenue generation and not about actual law enforcement.
And intimidation. I mean,
I
got pulled over multiple times for I didn't have any bolts to keep the back license plate on. So I put it in the window and the window would fog up. And then I get pulled over for that. I smoke a pipe. I'm old fashioned like Sherlock Holmes. And I get pulled over for that all the time because I don't know. I guess maybe pot smokers smoke wooden pipes. I don't know.
While they drive.
Exactly. While they drive, very blasé. But I get pulled over for that all the time. If there's a shooting, Nothing.
Forget it.
You know, it's interesting how people are getting reconditioned, Mark, because I belong to a club that in here in Connecticut where one of the members suggested we put cameras in the club. And I know Gus is familiar with the club. And everyone, all the members, this is a few years ago, everybody said, that is a ridiculous idea. It's spying. Yeah. You know, but there are, but now, today, there are cameras in the club.
Yeah, there's cameras there.
Yeah.
Here's a quote right from Orwell's novel, 1984. Every citizen, or at least every citizen important enough to be worth watching, could be kept for 24 hours a day under the eyes of the police and in the sound of official propaganda, with all channels of communication closed. The possibility of enforcing not only complete obedience to the will of the state, but complete uniformity of opinion on all subjects now existed for the first time.
Mm.
And now you see the integration, too, of the private sector, because don't you mention that in Chicago, the private cameras are integrated in the government camera network.
Yeah, you have the ability now for private businesses, private security cameras to feed into a central database at the police station in Chicago so that they can have access to those feeds as well. And not only is it we can maybe get into this later, but not only are we in a surveillance society, Big Brother is not only watching, intimidating, but through the control of information, through the mainstream media, through the propaganda, through entertainment, they are distracting people from being educated about what really matters, and they're able to shape the fears of society. They're able to shape the tastes. I mean, Orwell himself wrote, I'm quoting here, all the beliefs, habits, tastes, emotions, mental attitudes, and characteristics of our time really were designed to sustain the mystique of the party and to prevent the true nature of present-day society from being perceived.
If you'd like to join our conversation with Mark Dice about the growth in high-tech government surveillance, give us a call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756, or drop us an email at ken@mdrtalk.org.
So Mark, I want to shift gears a little bit. We've been talking a lot about surveillance technology, but I want to spend a bit of time talking about the future of technology. And I was looking in the New York Post a week ago while I was having lunch, and I came across this tiny little blurb on, you know, the middle of the newspaper where no one even looks. And on the left-hand side of one of the columns, there was something about I'll just read it. It says, working with Swiss researchers at Federal Polytechnic School, Nissan has developed a brain-machine interface that will allow future vehicles to prepare for a left or right turn, choosing the correct speed and positioning when they realize the driver is thinking about such a maneuver. So you dedicated a portion of your book to current technology research in the field of mind-reading technology and mind-machine interfaces. What can you tell us about where that's going to be going?
You know, your own thoughts, at least they used to be, the only last place of privacy. There was the one place where the government couldn't get at you, even with a warrant. You know, they can get into your papers and effects with a search warrant. Through your computer, obviously, nothing is safe. But your own private thoughts were the last bastion of privacy that we had, but now there's technology that can literally read your mind and can determine what you're thinking. It can pick out memories that you have. It can tell whether you've had what they call experiential knowledge of an event or of a sound, and so it's a functional MRI, essentially, is what it is, fMRI, and it reads your brain. And so let's just say that an authority figure wanted to determine whether or not you had seen a particular object, or you had witnessed a particular event, or you had been to a certain place. They can determine through an fMRI scan whether or not you have seen that object, heard that soundbite, or seen a particular place.
So pleading the fifth is basically impossible at this point.
Yeah, and not only is this technology available, but there was a woman in India, at least one person I know of, several years ago that was convicted of murder based on an fMRI scan that determined that she had experiential knowledge of the crime scene.
Incredible.
So this device determined that she had witnessed the crime scene with her own eyes. It picked up those thoughts in her mind, and that was the basis of her conviction.
And obviously, the implications that are just unknowable, because you could have been there before and seen it and just been upset about it, and they convict you on that. That's ridiculous. So we do have a phone call. So,
hello, caller. You're on the air. WPKN in context.
Hey, WPKN, how you doing?
Great.
In context. The most outrageous part of this that I think you're leaving out is that despite all this enhanced surveillance of the citizen, if you were to take a simple phone and try to record the authorities, forget about it. You'd be thrown in jail right away for eavesdropping.
Absolutely,
yeah, Mark. What do you think about that, Mark, about if we turn it around the other way and we look at the government, we're going to get in trouble?
Yeah, there's countless instances. The caller brings up a fantastic point. Countless instances.
Thank you, caller.
Of people recording police stops, and a lot of times when a police officer starts to get brutal with a suspect, in many instances, handicapped people, physically handicapped, mentally handicapped people, when people see a police officer acting inappropriately, now they can pull out their cell phone or smartphone and just start videotaping it. You don't have to happen to have a camcorder with you, obviously. Uh-huh. And so there are countless cases of these police then beating the person that is just gathering evidence, watching the police just to make sure, hey, I see this police officer beating this guy. This is horrible. I'm going to videotape this for evidence. Then the police come and beat them, or will threaten them with arrest and accuse them of committing an illegal wiretap, stating that because the officer does not approve of them recording their audio conversation, that they're claiming that it's a felony and an illegal wiretap, when it's clearly not. There was a 1967 Supreme Court case, Katz versus the United States, K-A-T-Z, versus the United States, that determined that in a public place, there is no reasonable expectation of privacy, so that you can video and audio record these people. But because most people don't know this, most people are intimidated by a police officer, especially when he's wielding a baton or a can of mace or pointing a gun at you. If the officer says, hey, this is a felony, what you're doing is a felony, most people are going to back off. So I think there needs to be a congressional hearing so that every police officer knows, every citizen knows, that 40 years ago, Katz versus the United States determined that there's no reasonable expectation in a public place, and that we can record these police. And so it's the perfect double standard, because the police officers, in many instances, have these POV, point-of-view cameras that record video and audio. We're under constant surveillance in public places, private places, government buildings. But, once you turn the tables and try to gather evidence of showing the authority figures acting inappropriately, they obviously don't like that. And in many countless instances, you can find these on YouTube, have brutally beaten people for videotaping them, threatened them, and in a lot of cases have arrested them and charged them with a felony wiretap just to cause the person problems, just to intimidate them so that them, even though the case always gets dropped, so that people know they the word gets out to their friends, holy cow, I videotaped the police officer. Now I'm facing a felony. Now I'm facing many years in prison as an intimidation tactic, so that the authority figures can do whatever they want to, but us poor little slaves can't be free, can't even hold them accountable. And that was it's the same thing in Orwell's book. You have the inner party members, obviously the inner circle of the government, that could do whatever they wanted. They could turn off the telescreens, as they were called, which were these surveillance cameras and propaganda screens that were in everyone's home, the inner party could turn those off. The inner party had the luxuries of real food and a nice home and regular working hours and conditions, but the poor slaves and the lower level outer party government officials didn't have that luxury, or what they called a luxury, which is really just an average equal right.
As an important side note, I do know that by following the local laws here in Connecticut that there was a recent affirmation of our right to videotape police and record them without being threatened of any kind of crime. So check your local laws.
If you want to join the conversation.
It's incredible. I mean, we have congressional hearings. They spend all this money on bringing baseball players in front of Congress and asking them if they took
right.
steroids.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really high priority. If you want to join our conversation with Mark Dice, give us a ring here at In Context, 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. We're talking with author Mark Dice about the growth in high-tech government surveillance.
Mark, we have an email from Abby in New Mexico, and she asks, the war on terror is clearly a different type of war. Americans have been asked to give up some portion of the democratic process as a result. When the government and media outlets constantly say that our troops are fighting for our freedom, isn't our government undermining the very freedoms our brave men and women are allegedly protecting?
Absolutely, and while I respect the troops, I support the troops, I don't support the war and the orders that they're given. A lot of them are in a very odd predicament.
Right.
That's an Orwellian term. In the book, an Orwellian doublespeak term refers to labeling something with a label that is clearly false in order to just get the people to take it on its face value.
Right, right.
And so this it's Operation Iraqi Freedom. You know, so you just the brain dead zombie average American takes that they're fighting for freedom. Well, no. They really it's sad to say this is empire building. This was to take the oil. And people say, "Well, wait, how come gas is $4 a gallon then?" Well, do you think that they went to take the oil so they could give us a good deal on it? No. They went to take the oil to continue the monopoly. That's why we're over there in Libya as well. I mean, it's just no coincidence that Libya has the largest oil reserves in Africa.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, once you just mentioned the doublethink, and I think that something really important is the misnaming of government organizations. Like, for example, the Department of Defense, the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, they do the exact opposite of what they're named after, just like you have the Ministry of Truth and the Ministry of Plenty in 1984.
Yeah, exactly. In the novel, the government agencies, the Ministry of Truth was the propaganda ministry that obviously just created and disseminated the government propaganda, so it was clearly not the truth. And we have the Department of Defense, which really doesn't necessarily defend. It provocateurs and starts war. Actually used to be called the Department of War until they decided to change it. The Patriot Act is a perfect example. They clearly labeled that so that you're patriotic.
Right.
Oh, wait, you don't support the Patriot Act? What are you, an anti-American?
Yeah, really.
You know, and then we have the same thing with the war in Libya. It was really the civil war in Libya, and they called it a kinetic military action.
Uh-huh.
So we're not going into another war. It wasn't just the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, now the war in Libya. It was a kinetic military act.
You know, you can accomplish a lot through redefining words like torture.
Well, kinetics are very powerful.
Kinetics, good.
Oh, yeah. Torture as well. Really, torture is just an enhanced
interrogation
technique. You know, I mean, it's just like UFC,
drowning.
The Ultimate Fighting Championships. It's not really a fight. It's just sort of it's an enhanced argument.
Exactly, exactly.
Do we have another caller?
Hold on a second. Caller, where are you coming from?
I'm coming from Long Island.
All right, great. What's your question?
My question is actually it's a comment and a question.
Uh-huh.
on a much smaller scale, many of our workplaces had video cameras.
Yes.
Me being into technology and gadgets and in that industry, I always carry around my flip with me. I was getting into video blogging, and my iPhone with videotaping capabilities. Now, there are meetings that we have where it's not giving away any confidential information, but it's, hey, I want to record this because I want to make sure, you know, I don't trust this particular manager, and I want to make sure, you know, I let them know it's for my notes, and it's for things that I want to write down, you know, going forward at the end of the night, so I have the meeting all taken care of. They don't want that because they don't want, you know, they don't want to be held accountable for anything. And that bothers me that it's always a he said, she said. So this is much more of a smaller scale of Big Brother, but it's still Big Brother. What do you think about the workplace and having video cameras, not only in the stock rooms, but in the front room, in the side room, you know, essentially everywhere but the bathroom, and who knows when they're going to be put there?
What do you think of that, Mark?
That's a perfect question. It's more, obviously more intimidation.
Thanks, caller.
Because the management has the authority they're trying to use. They want to be able to use the surveillance and not have the lower-level workers use it. And there's a perfect example. I was in a Subway sandwich restaurant this is probably 2 years ago now, when I discovered it, and it's still there last I checked a few months ago, where the owner put a microphone in right by the cash register, not only just a camera, a microphone. And I noticed this, and it said it was buried under the cash register, and it said audio monitoring device for him to try to, you know, just prevent any legal problems if anyone were to say that he was eavesdropping on everyone. And he would say, well, that was labeled, but it was hidden under the register. And I was speaking with the workers there, and luckily the owner wasn't there, and they said, yeah, it's a microphone that is wirelessly feeding over the internet, and so the owner can listen in on them at any time. And obviously, clearly, more intimidation. I mean, I know when I was, you know, when I'm just having a little downtime at work, and I'm talking to one of my friends, one of my coworkers, about some personal issues that I'm having with my girlfriend, or maybe even making some complaints about upper management, I certainly don't want to. I have to be looking over my shoulder thinking, oh, man, what if he's actually listening to me right now?
Yeah.
So that's clearly another example of the Orwellian invasion in the workplace.
Mark, we only have a few minutes left, and thank you so much for being with us. It's a terrific show. Before we finish, I would like you to discuss two really important phenomena, Echelon and Carnivore. Could you talk about those two?
Yes, Echelon is the most advanced spy system that thankfully we know of, probably that you could even imagine. And Carnivore is the internet version of this. But Echelon essentially filters every communication known to man, whether it's a fax, a text message, a voice conversation. So this conversation that we're having right now has literally being fed through, either it's in real time or it's being analyzed after the fact in an NSA, a National Security Agency database.
And presumably highlighted in red.
Yeah, to determine, since we've used so many key words in this conversation, essentially Echelon, it literally listens and records or filters them after the fact, every conversation and text message for keywords and even for voice prints.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody's having a conversation and they use a specific series of keywords in that conversation, that conversation will be flagged, it's recorded, it will be looked at then by a human intelligence analyst to determine, well, who was that conversation? What are they saying? Is this some sort of a threat? The internet's the same way. So whether you have, let's say someone's a targeted individual and they pick up a payphone in Mexico, their voice print will be picked up by Echelon, and it will determine, it'll know what they said. This is all kept under wraps. What they said, what phone they were on, who they were calling. And so some people argue, well, this is a good thing. We need to make sure Al-Qaeda is not doing it. But just imagine what J. Edgar Hoover would have done with this. J. Edgar Hoover, obviously the corrupt former head of the FBI, who
Right.
used wiretaps to intimidate people and just blackmail people, essentially. So if anybody that has access to the Echelon wanted to determine, hey, what politicians are you know, talking about the Bilderberg Group and their private conversations. We need to find out who knows about this. Let's tap these people. That's now possible. It has been possible. Echelon has been around for over 30 years. And with the technology that we have today, just imagine I can take my iPhone here and using one of the SoundHound apps or something else, I could just press a button. It can listen to a song on the radio, and it can tell me within seconds which song that is. So Echelon is basically a large version of that that listens to and analyzes and data mines all conversations and electronic communications for that kind of information.
Now, before we run out of time, I just want you to quickly explain or comment on, now we know that Facebook was started with hedge fund money from shell companies that were connected to CIA and NSA, and that Facebook and Twitter are intimately connected, and Google via YouTube and its search methods feed everything into a central grid. Can you comment quickly, because we only have a couple minutes left, on your GPS tagging and just commenting and volunteering information that the government is able to then surf through and find information about people?
Facebook is the CIA's dream come true, and advertisers' dream come true. And never in a million years would I have imagined that people would willingly give up so much information. They're data mining not only Twitter, but they're data mining people's status updates in order to profile individuals, in order to allegedly search for plots. But I'll just give you one example. I have a friend of mine, an associate, that posted a message about a flash mob at the Federal Reserve in New York City, and this individual didn't have he's just an ordinary guy, didn't have a fan base or anything, anybody. He was just trying to, encourage people to go and show up at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York as a protest for the fiat currency system on a specific day and a specific time. He posted it, a day or two earlier before the event. And he went there, and there were police officers stationed. There was probably a dozen police officers that were surrounding the Federal Reserve Bank of New York City. And he walked up with his hidden camera and pushing a stroller with his infant son and pretended to play dumb and asked these police, hey, what's going on over here? And they said, well, we got word that there was a flash mob that was going to happen.
Wow, so incredible.
They're able to determine, pick out flash mobs, to pick up they want to put their finger on the pulse of America. And since people are posting status updates on what it is that they're thinking, what it is that they're doing, what they like, what they don't like, the NSA, the CIA, these alphabet agencies are able to data mine that practically in real time.
Mark, we're going to have to cut it off there because we're out of time, but we really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's a wonderful conversation.
Hey, thanks for your interest, guys.
Yeah, Mark is the author of Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True. You can learn more about him at his website, markdice.com, his Facebook page, facebook.com/markdice.
And we'll be here next week, next Monday, October 31st, with our monthly war report.
You can find our website at incontextreport.com and search us on Facebook so the NSA can find out more about us. See ya.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.